Well, good day, everybody, and welcome back to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and it's great to have everybody here. Whether you're listening to us at disasterpodcast.com or maybe catching us on your favorite podcast app or iTunes or whatever the case may be, it's great to have you here. And, you know, I wouldn't be a Disaster Podcast episode if it wasn't for my great and esteemed and wonderful co-host, Sam Bradley.
Oh, I'm esteemed and wonderful this week. That's great. And we're so glad you're here. And you're going to be so glad you're here when you listen to the wonderful things that we're going to talk about today with our special guest that you may have heard of last week. And of course, we have our most special guest, Dr. Joe Holley, who actually is responsible for bringing our guest to us. Hi, Joe.
Well, hi, guys. I'm pleased to know that I'm actually responsible for something. So.
Well, no, I tell you, it's interesting how we get guests on this show. We get them in a couple different ways. People that Sam and I know, people that Joe knows or Jim know, people that we connect with randomly in the course of our other day jobs and things, maybe conversations we have that turn into, hey, you know what? You should come on this great little show I do called the Disaster Podcast.
It's always in the back of
my mind. Am I wrong, Joe? Isn't that how Dan got on the show?
Oh, very much so. Yeah. He and I sort of knew each other very distantly and reconnected over something totally different, and off we go. So that's how those things tend to work. You're exactly right.
So without too much further ado, let's go ahead and jump in. This is the second half of the episode started last week. So if you're listening to this episode, you might want to go back and listen to last week's episode first and then come in and listen to the rest of this episode. But let's jump in with more of these amazing disaster response stories coming out of Dr. Dan Diamond.
But I was going to tell you about Sergeant Bailey. You know, I mean, cops are a little bit different than the rest of the world anyway. And I think everybody would agree with that.
They have to be.
So Bailey figures when he's a kid, he wants to be a cop because he wants to protect and serve. You know, it sounds corny, but it's cool. And so when Katrina was barreling down on New Orleans, he's like, well, you know, I'm not leaving. Some of the cops did, but he decided he was going to stay. So he hunkered down in his house. And the next morning, he gets up and he's cleaning up all these big oak branches in his yard and stacking them into a big pile to burn them. And he hears the same big noise that Kathy heard, and he looks down the street and sees this wall of water. Well, a normal person's going to be thinking, like, run, Forrest, run! No. He's thinking, I got to get my weapons out of my car. Okay. So he runs over, pops the trunk, gets his weapons out, runs in through the front door of his house, up two flights of stairs to his attic to hide him in this secret spot. And as he's turning to come back, he realized for the first time that the water had followed him up the stairs. So then he has this, you know, split second. Well, do I go into the attic and hope it doesn't keep coming up, or do I go down the stairs? And, well, you know, we all know what happened to the people that went into their attic and waited. A lot of those people died in New Orleans in their attic, unfortunately. So he took a bunch of deep breaths and he swam down one flight, turned down the other flight, through his entryway, out the front door, and then burst up outside of his house and grabbed onto the gutter. Climbs up onto his roof, and you got to put a pitch out there for Motorola radios at this point. His Motorola radio still worked. Go figure. He calls CENTCOM and says, Sergeant Bailey here, the levee's broken, I'm trapped in my roof, send help. And the CENTCOM operator comes back and says, stand by, Sergeant Bailey, we'll get to you as soon as we can. It's like, and then he said it was the worst experience of his entire career. He could hear his colleagues screaming into the radio, send help, the water's coming up, I'm trapped with my family. And then bzz, his radio went. And he figured it was his radio that went out. What he didn't realize is that it was all the radios that went out, because all the radio repeaters for CENTCOM were on the first floor, and the water just hit them. So instantly, they lost all the communication for fire, police, emergency medical services. Biggest natural disaster of our entire history of our nation, no communication. That's a whole, we could do a whole radio show, whole podcast.
Oh, most certainly.
Communication goes sideways, and how do you get it back online? But he said he paced back and forth on his roof for probably about 10 hours. And you can't blame him. You know, you're walking back and forth looking at this stinky water with all kinds of gross stuff floating in it, thinking, I don't know that I want to jump into that. It's kind of like life.
You know, where would he go anyway?
Well, yeah. Well, But after a while, he figured, well, if I'm going to protect people and I'm going to serve people, I got to make a difference with my life. I can't stay on my roof. Help's not coming. So he jumped in, swam to his neighbor's house, held onto the gutter for a little bit, swam to his next neighbor's house, climbed up on top of his van and caught his breath for a while. He figures he swam for a mile before he was picked up by two Vietnamese people in a 17-foot aluminum boat. Same boat.
Must have been a lot of those boats.
No, same boat.
The same boat?
Same boat.
So this was at the same period of time that Kathy was having her experience.
Sergeant Bailey was the one that told me the story about her.
Oh.
So you look at this and go, you know, here's a dude that you could say, well, nobody would blame you for just staying on your roof. But they rescued, Sergeant Bailey and his two Vietnamese friends, rescued hundreds of people over a four-day period. Hundreds of people. Making trips back and forth and back and forth and back and forth while they were being shot at. And that was not the only time they got shot.
That's insane.
It is.
That makes no sense to me.
Makes no sense. It was. I mean, you think there's just such crazy stuff happened in New Orleans. But what a great example of, here's a man that says, it's not all about me. I remember, you know, Juliette Saucy, the director of EMS, she came to help out, and she has this shirt on. When I first met her, it said New Orleans EMS in the front, said paramedic in big letters on the back. I'll never forget this. So I'm telling her a story. I'm telling her, okay, so I know exactly what to do with you. I'd like you to come over and work with my buddy, Dr. Bob, and I'm just going to put you in the red area because I assume you can start IVs, and that would be really helpful. And so, and then after about 6 hours of working alongside her, I'm thinking, man, she's the smartest paramedic I've ever met in my life. So I take one of the other New Orleans guys away aside and said, hey, is Juliet a paramedic? And they go, no, man. No, no, no. She's the director of EMS for the entire city of New Orleans. I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, I'm an idiot. You know, I mean, I trained under Mike Copas in Seattle. And so and he always put the fear of God in all of us. And so I'm thinking, what have I done? I'm not going to survive this. I go back over to her and I said, you know, I am so sorry, Juliet. I had no idea you were director of EMS. Please forgive me for coming in and assuming the director of this triage unit thing. I work for you. We'll stand down if you want. You can have our equipment. We'll do whatever. I'm just eating, you know, both my shoes. and she says, you have no idea. I mean, and she looked at me with these eyes that went right through my heart. She said, you know, have no idea. We begged God that you would come. We've been working 18, 20-hour days. People have been shooting at us while we're trying to rescue them. And we begged him that you would come. So you can, you know, don't you dare stand down. You keep working. You run this thing, and I will come, and I will work for you. And I said, I'm totally okay with that, but I do have a question for you. What's with the paramedic shirt? Are you trying to throw off the out-of-town boys? I will never forget this. She looked right at me, and she said, it's the only shirt I own. I just bought a new house. I hadn't moved into my new house yet. Hadn't sold my old house. I lost both my homes. I lost all my belongings. This is all I have left.
Oh, my God.
I was speechless. It's like, oh.
And she's out there taking care of other people.
Yeah. Well, she's being shot at. You know, at some point you just say, I'm leaving. I'm getting out of here. You don't understand. I lost everything. She didn't do that. She stayed there. She laid down her life I mean, she didn't die, but she risked her life and rallied her teams and figured out how to mobilize her teams to get out there and rescue people. And man, I have a lot of respect for her and for Sergeant Bailey and for all the other people that I worked alongside that looked at it and said, I have the power to make a difference. It's not about me. I don't care who gets the credit. We have a job to get done. Let's rally and go do something.
That's amazing. I've never heard any of those stories. I mean, I'm so glad that you're writing those in your book, I assume.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic people.
Amazing people. Changed my life.
And she had to know there's nothing she could do about the home she lost. I mean, what can you do at that point? Absolutely nothing. So you can either, going back to what you were saying about how different people think, she can sit there and bemoan her fate. She can blame George Bush. She can blame some external force. Or she can just make the best of it. And that's what she chose to do.
Yeah. It's incredible. You know, and I think that the thing that had occurred to me is that it's not four different kinds of people. It's not like, you know, some are victims and some are manipulators and some are bystanders and some are thrivers. It's four different mindsets. And we all bounce back and forth between it. You know, at first when I was writing, running this story over and over and over again in my head of these guys shooting at Kathy, I'm thinking, well, I would never do that. Who would do that? Then I think, well, have you ever shot an email? And I went, oh, I hate to want to have these conversations with myself. Have you ever shot, have you, Dan Diamond, ever shot a look at your wife? And I went, oh, man. You know, sometimes we behave like manipulators because we think we have the power and it's all about us.
Well, and people don't think terribly rationally under those circumstances. I mean, the fact that these people on the roof were trying to big borrow, or, you know, we got food, we got money, we got water, we got whatever you need. They were just feeling, you know, and this isn't certainly an excuse for what they were doing, but they were desperate.
Yeah,
I guess. And they didn't know anything about Kathy such that they could, you know, besmirch her character. But all they knew is they wanted to be rescued, and it they would do whatever they had to do to make that happen.
My question for those guys, if I ever meet them, and I never will, but my question would be, if you had food, money, and water, and you're looking from the roof down at this woman with her two children sitting there for 4 days, why the heck did you go save her? What's wrong?
Hello?
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah. But it's not, you know, I like to take this stuff from the disaster zone where it's easy to look at it and bring it back home to how do I live? How do I interact with my friends and my family? How do I interact at work? There's some days I go to work and I'm feeling like a victim, man. You know, I got epic the electronic medical records, man. I'm supposed to be productive, not have any patient wait times. and then I got to try to get information into Epic.
And you know what would be really interesting is if you could go back to Kathy and the officer Bailey and some of those people and see how different are they. Still the same people they always were? Were they those people before they made those decisions? Are they different people now?
Yeah.
You know, just to see how that experience changed who they were or just made them better at who they were.
Yeah, I would love to do that. I actually talked to Anderson Cooper. He interviewed me a couple of times and talked to him afterwards and said, why don't we put together a TV show to celebrate these people that are doing amazing things and then track them over the next year and see what do they end up doing with their lives. But they didn't get any traction.
Well, it would be great, too, to see, you know, how did Kathy do, or not Kathy so much, but the other gal with her two homes. Was she able to rebuild any of that? Did she get any money back? How did Kathy do with, she was left with virtually nothing but her two kids. I mean, that's the thing that bothers me about disaster. And if you make parallels between our everyday medicine and disaster, you have some closure on people. But when you're treating people in a disaster, you're treating their immediate needs, but then you hear these stories and you never know what happens to them. You never know if they find their family members.
I can tell you what happened to Juliet. We're still friends.
Are you?
Yeah, it's true. Actually, I had a conversation with Juliet day before yesterday. She's doing great. She works for, she's a corporate medical director now. She's gotten married since that time. She had a little health issue, but she's doing well from that. It is the exact same person you described. I too had lots of interactions with Juliet while I was down there, and she is just as amazing now as she was then.
She was up here for an EMS conference in the Seattle area last year, and I took her out for dinner, and I sat across the table and wept as I told her that she was my hero.
Absolutely.
Joe, we got to get her on a podcast.
I would love to do that.
I would love to talk to someone like that.
Yeah,
we're kind of doing the Juliet show right here, you know.
Yeah, she made a tremendous difference. And her whole crew, they just rallied, you know. They improvised, they regrouped and figured out a way for who was going to cover what part of the town. And you know, they bring in cows, the cells on wheels. So the cell people did a great job getting us back up and giving us cell service.
Yes, they did.
And so we were able to dispatch by people would call 911 or what, I don't know how it worked, if they actually called 911 or what, but somehow it got routed to the cell phone for the dispatch person. And then they used just kind of line of sight radios to dispatch. Or simplex, you know, it was not, they didn't use the repeaters because those were all toast, but they were able to dispatch. It was amazing.
Yeah, we actually spent our last few days there doing nothing but responding to days old 911 calls that were in the queue still waiting for a response. And that's, we cleaned a lot of those calls up by going out and checking on whatever it was that the call was about.
Yeah.
And they were still there, Joe? Those situations still...
Well, usually not, but, you know, it was just somebody had called from help and left this address, and so we would make our way to that address and, you know, look to see if there were problems or see if there was some kind of situation or whatever. Most of the time, we didn't find anything. Occasionally, we would come across someone who had a problem or was still there or was some ongoing issue, but usually... it had resolved itself in some sort of way. So there was rarely anything really acute going on. But of course that was on top of, other, calls that were, coming in all the time from 911. I mean, the cardiac arrests and the chest pains and all that stuff, you know, it never stops. So, some of those calls were new and some of those were left over from, the hours after the levees breaking.
And, of course, you know, as we know, we've talked about before, people with chronic medical problems, it's always made worse in an environment like that. If not the stress, it's just one factor, but you get all of that sewage and it just exacerbates all these conditions. So your normal everyday call load is going to be astronomically larger just because of that kind of thing.
Oh, absolutely right. And exactly as Dan touched on earlier, you know, there's also, you know, folks with their pets and, like with Dan, we saw just as many crazy pets from ferrets to cats to snakes to alligators to, you know, skinks and everything else you can think of that people were not going to leave home without. And you had to figure out what you're going to do with them, where you're going to put them, how you're going to transport them and all those other sort of issues. So it definitely got a little crazy.
Well, unfortunately, Dan, I think we have just not even begun to scratch the surface of all the wonderful stories. I wanted to hear more about some of the more recent deployments you went on. So we are definitely going to have you back and do this again. I could see we could do this several times and never run out of stories.
No, I got a lifetime of stories, my gosh.
And you have me mesmerized, I have to tell you. If anyone was looking at me, I'd be sitting here with my mouth hanging open listening to you. But we have to wind this down a little bit, unfortunately. But it's just, you know, we have talked a lot, the three of us, Jamie and Joe and Jim, when he's here, about how do you plan for something like this? How do you train this into people? Because you can, like you said, every disaster is different, and you can't possibly set up and expectations for what they're going to walk into when you know it's you're going to see a lady eating snakes. I mean, you know, you just can't ever prepare people for this. So, you know, the kind of training we do is just the best we can do with just saying, hey, you just got to think on your feet, like you were saying about finding tents and creating your own shelters. You do what it is you have to do. But, you know, to the extent that we can, we try to train, if nothing else, the concept that you're not going to go in with anything you can use, or you're going to just have to think on your feet and make it happen as it happens. So, and of course, that's what Joe does with Paragon. He does that kind of training. And I think every podcast we have, he takes away a little something that he's going to add to the next one. Right, Joe?
Absolutely.
So we definitely want to get you back, Dan. I said, there's so much we haven't talked about, and I can't wait for this book to come out.
You know, I've got a workshop that I've been doing with corporations now called Disaster Improv. One of the things that you don't know about me is I used to be a street mime in Seattle. One of the nice ones.
No kidding.
No kidding. And so you take the improv side and the disaster side, mash those together, you come up with some agility in disaster zones that you can teach.
You are fascinating. You know that? I can't wait to meet you sometime. I can see why Joe just bonded with you so quickly. You're fascinating.
Well, you got to come out here anyway. You know that.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll find a way. Yeah. You got beer, you know.
Yeah. Exactly. We have fireman beer.
So, Dan, working folks, if they want to reach out to you, find out more about what you're doing, maybe even look at some of the things you're doing with your corporate training and things like that, bringing this disaster concept and management and into a corporate infrastructure, where can they find you?
I think go to the website. It's dandiamondmd.com.
Excellent. I'll have a link to that in the show notes and make sure people can link to you there and find you, because this is going to be a double episode. So we'll have two episodes worth of listening to Dan. And this is the second of those two episodes at this point. Joe, where can folks find you and Paragon and what you guys are doing?
Well, Paragon is on the web at paragonmedicalgroup.com or by the same moniker on Facebook. And our Twitter feed is ParagonMedEDU.
And Sam.
And me, Sam Bradley, 11 at the usual social media places and certainly on the disasterpodcast.com. And we really hope to hear from you about these episodes and think, you know, they have to have some questions for you, Dan. This has just been too fascinating, and I'm sure that they would love to have you back. But we'd also like to know what else you want us to talk about and what kind of guests you might want us to have on there. We've had really good luck lately with some of our guests, and we're looking for more. And Jamie, where do we find you?
Well, you can find me under the handle PodMedic in most places on social media. And, of course, all of my shows, including the Disaster Podcast, over at MedicCast.com. But this is where we're going to find this show, and that's DisasterPodcast.com. So head over there. Remember, when you leave a comment there, it's just like shooting us an email. We get back to you, and we can get Dan to put a response to something you might have in the way of a question on there, or he can email us, and we can put it up there for him. But we can make sure that we get more of a discussion, as we always encourage you to do. So, folks, head over to DisasterPodcast.com and check out all of us there. Look at our previous episodes and leave us a comment about what you want to check out more of in the future. But, you know, one thing Dan's kind of brought to mind is we have our tagline on the show, Sam, but again, it just seems like every time we have these guests on, it reiterates it over and over and over again.
I was just thinking the same thing. Boy, if this doesn't say it, nothing says it. But disaster medicine is not your everyday medicine.